Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAR Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday with Conan and Stevie here with me in studio, and we're in association with Paddy Power. The only place to start, lads, is Arlene is going to the Ulster final now. Isn't that?
Is she going?
She wants a ticket. She hasn't been offered a ticket. And if she gets a ticket, well, then she might go.
She has been offered a ticket, has she not? The Fermanagh
No, I don't think she has been offered, has she?
Invitation.
Oh, did they?
Saying, we will get you a ticket.
Right, okay.
Will she go, though? Will she go?
Will she go?
It's hard to know. Well, they say that she might go because this match is in Clonus. And these unionist politicians have issues with the Irish national anthem being played in
Northern
what they
Ireland.
See as Northern Ireland, but this will be in the Republic. So for that reason, she might be able to go to that. But I hate Arlene Foster, but I'm very interested in whether she goes to this match or not. How needy are we that we kind of any little bit of interest from someone, even that we hate, we're just like, we're needy in the GAA. We really are. Look at the English reaction to hurling. Oh, what are they saying about our game?
Yeah.
Americans tried to pronounce Irish names as an other big one. But it's interesting. Peter Robinson, the old DUP politician, he went to Derry v Tyrone in the McKenna Cup a few years
back. That
was
Nick Leather Burns. That was back in 2012, actually.
And that was Northern Ireland and the national anthem. And then he went to that match for Mickeela Hurt. At the time, like, so he did a lot of good work around then for the GAA, and it's really important sort of for cross community stuff. And
it is
a sport. I know what it stands for and all that, but
it is
a sport at the end of the day, and you do want everybody feeling like they can
play
it.
And it's a weird one when you have Arlene Foster being positive about Fermanagh's win and you have Joe Brawley being very negative about that whole
time. Well, Joby's negative. most things Ulster anyway.
Come here, the debate every week is about what's on TV, and this has never been the case before because the obvious big matches, there was two a weekend and they were going to be on television. So now we're all talking, and you see most websites are kind of doing pieces on what RT are showing and Sky are showing. So RT this week have gone for Dublin Longford, which in my opinion is a big mistake, because that's just going to give fuel for the negativity around football, because it's a minus 18 on the handicap, and they're going for the Munster hurling as well. Like, there's a big argument to be made, and I'm always complaining about this, is that show the two hurling this weekend, because they're the two really important Munster hurling championship. You would like to see Laois Carlow over Dublin Longford, but Laois Carlow is on a two, which is
same time.
It's the same time as the Munster hurling. So people complaining about Laois Carlow are wasting their time, because that's not possible for RT to show that. So it's going to be Dublin Longford. It's going to be a hammering, and it's not going to do anything. It's going to have a brilliant Munster championship hurling on the same day as an awful one-sided football, and it's just going to give rise to more negativity.
Yeah, and football is taking a hammering at the minute, and the reality is the football championship is really only going to kick into force in the next couple of weeks. Laois and Carlow, you can be guaranteed that it's going to be a competitive game of football.
Yeah.
So, I would have preferred that was the game being aired live on TV. But
Donegal Down would trump, in my opinion, it would trump Dublin Longford.
But
that's on at the same time, and there's no reason why that couldn't have been on. Now, we didn't get a great game last week in the Ulster Championship, and maybe that's what's turned them off.
Yeah, but to be fair, Donegal and Down will both go out to play a game of football. I do think that Donegal have changed their ways over the last 12 months. A little bit. But they are more attack-minded. But the Munster Hurling Championship, has certainly got the total rights to all games being showed. And, while it's been a competitive championship so far, I still think, the GAA, RTE and Sky and whatever else can look into maybe showing a wee bit more football.
Yeah, well, we have Tyrone Meath, it has to be said. That's on Sky. Sky were smart enough to show that one, because that could be a good game in Parktaldon. But we'll talk all about the games now soon. I wanted to run this drug testing thing past the two of you, and this was kind of news last week and wouldn't have enough time on Monday to talk about it. But Sport Ireland are holding back the players' grants from last year. They won't pay the GAA players their grants because the GPA are refusing to sign up to home testing. I have a strong opinion on this, in that I think they're completely out of order. I think that's last year's grants have to be paid. If they want to withhold future grants, I would understand that, but I think that's petty if that's what's happening now, and I don't think there's any maybe legal basis for it, considering it's an old kind of deal, you know what I mean? It's last year's payments. But anyways, I don't think GAA players should be tested at home. I hear a lot of radio stations talking about this, and they're all saying the same thing, and they're saying that they have to sign up, they're getting grants, they're getting government money. It's a stipulation that Sport Ireland, if you're getting taxpayers' money, you have to sign up to this. And that's fair enough. Well, I'd say keep the grants then, because I don't think this should be happening, that testers come and knocking on your door at home.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, why don't they just increase the random training test?
What's the value of the grants? 500-600 euro at the most, is it?
They've gone back up a little bit. They had gone down nearly to 400, the lowest ones. Yeah. And then, like, but you could, there's All Ireland champions now getting maybe 1500 or, you know, which is,
yeah, but
is
ultimately
decent,
but you have to go for a sustained period of time and championship to get that amount of money. And, you know, the value of those grants doesn't warrant for me.
No, you get more in your traveling in your, yeah, travel expense. Like, when I was coming down from Dublin with Laois for a month, we spoke about this on the show before. I was getting upwards of €1,000 a month, yeah, in expenses, and then this whole thing about the grant, where you might get 700 at the end of a whole year, and we're supposed to be bowing down, yeah, thanking for this money. Like, I mean, keep your money. We do realise
that there are GAA players out there who are afforded endorsement deals and whatever else. And then you look at the amateur athletics, who are getting maybe grants of 15,000 to 20,000. You know, there's no comparison in 15,000 to 20,000 to 500 or 600 euros.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's for a full year. It has, like, we're not talking about this as a monthly payment. This is this is at the end, yeah, of a year, and this is meant to be allowing testers come into your own house. So you train 2 or 3 times a week, and then, like, I mean, a lot of athletes will train during the day and be home that evening. GAA players are in the gym or they're somewhere else. They're, like, I mean, when are you even going to catch them at home? Then I can foresee a situation where a player is just stupid and he's not there when the testers come, and suddenly then, oh, Mo Farah, he didn't hear the doorbell, and these doping brigade journalists.
Or a Rio Ferdinand situation.
Same kind of thing. Like, I mean, I don't think they need that. GAA is not a high-risk sport. Mm-hmm. They've had 2 positives since drug testing started, and one of them was for a bloody inhaler for Aidan O'Mahony. The other one in Monaghan wasn't even a regular intercounty. He was on a panel for a while, but he was taken something that he shouldn't have been taken. Now, that's not high risk as far as I'm concerned, and it's not like GAA has these brilliant doping doctors that are ahead of the testers. Like, I mean, yeah, your local GP is often your medic in an intercounty setup.
He's your advisor.
He's just there on a voluntary basis. Yeah. He's not even getting paid a lot of the time. That was my experience. You think he knows anything about getting onto a drug cycle program? It shouldn't be compared to Olympic sports, is my point, because Olympic sports athletes accept that they have to prove their innocence because of the culture and the history of the sports a lot of the time they're in. Comparing GAA to that, oh God.
Olympic sport athletes are training 7 days a week, 24 hours a day almost, you know. You know what I mean? Yes, they have their rest period and all, but their training schedule is totally related to preparing them for the Olympics. A Gaelic footballer's schedule is not totally related to preparing them for an All-Ireland final, because they have to get up on a Monday to Friday and go and work.
Yeah, now there are some amateur athletes that have work, yeah, and not getting grants that do this. But again, I think the onus is on these athletes to prove their innocence. And I think a lot of these athletes, because of the culture of the sports they're in, they want to prove their innocence. They want to.
Yeah.
And when I tweeted about this last week, I really hate this, because you have all these minions and they read these doping brigade journalists, and, like, I mean, they move a narrative from cycling into GAA, and it's like, well, for a clean sport, you not prefer transparency, etc. And, like, I mean, the governing body should be enforcing this. And, you know, it's all, you hear stuff about the UCI and a clean sport and transparency, basically the sky debate. And to try to move this across into a sport that has no history of doping, no culture of it, and already signed up for training, testing and after match testing. And I think most GAA players would go, if you want to increase the amount of training, random tests, which, if the tests are not frequent enough, I would be all for increasing that. But not, don't be knocking on your home door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I still don't think the amateur thing, I guess what you're saying, like, you know, that it's not in the culture of the GAA. It's not, that it's nowhere near comparable to cycling or anything like that. But, like, I don't think the amateur thing is that good of an excuse, because it's still the most popular sport in Ireland.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not using the amateur thing.
No, but
I'm using the fact that there's no history of it. It doesn't happen in it, and, I mean,
but
that
even
the testing,
then, like,
the training testing, and the match testing is more than enough in a very low risk sport. Forget about amateur. I do get that.
Like, I do, and I'm not saying that I'm all for this, but it is standard procedure in nearly every sport in the world just to have these tests done. And I think for GA people, like county players who are responsible for the biggest TV audience that we have in Ireland and people are most interested in and they play the most, they should have a certain level of responsibility to almost show like what they're doing is clean. I know that they are. Like,
there's no question marks about them. You see, they don't have to. The onus is fine. Not to prove yourself.
But also, just you look at the nutrition that they're going through, like all the gym stuff that you mentioned, all the stuff they're doing anyway. I mean, why can't just taking a piss for 10 seconds be part of that as well? Like, just if you want to play a county, just do that and hand them over.
But
the
I think going to your home is invading your privacy as well.
I think so. I do think so. I think it's a step too far. I don't think it's needed. I think the GPA are. In cases like this, I love the GPA. That's a proper players' union. No, we're not signing up to this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where they're fighting for players. Like, I want the GPA to do this against the GAA. That's why I often criticise them. But anyways, Declan Bonner, lads, moving on, has been talking about he doesn't give a shit what's written about them. And that was a direct quote, once they're in an Ulster final. Yeah. So this was being asked, obviously, on the back of the negativity about the last Ulster match. And I don't think Donegal are necessarily at that level. Donegal are pretty slick in their movement of the ball. There's not a, you know, I think they're a little bit better at it. But he's saying this is very defensive teams, a lot of hand passing, etc. It's part and parcel of the game. It'll happen all over the summer. All the commentators will talk about it, but there's no rule in the book to say you can't play like that. That's the interesting thing, and that's obvious. There's no rule in the book. If a team wants to play 14 men behind the 21, they can do that. And it's there and you have to adapt to it. That's what it's all about. And that's true. And like,
absolutely.
I mean, but that is true. But I started thinking about this, and I consistently trying to think up of different rules about how we can prevent this abomination of the hand passing around and the kicking the ball backwards and you're hand passing outside a screen and you can't get through, so you're playing keep ball and it's like, yeah. Jesus, it's like basketball before the shot clock came in. It's boring. It's getting a very negative publicity. Now, I know Brolly and Spillane don't help, but there's a lot of people out there feel the same way. Like, I meet them, I talk to them. He says, that's a waste of time, a lot of that football. Like, that's, I was sitting beside fellas in the stand in McHale Park, old stock GA men, with the programme rolled up, you know, like proper old school. And they're not enjoying it.
This sounds like a Brolly article.
But they're shouting on their county. Because we all love our counties, whether,
absolutely,
you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, I text Pat McEnany yesterday and I says to him, Pat, in the international rules, when you have to count the hand passes, how hard is that to do? It's easy, he said. It's easy to do. What I do, he said, this is him talking, what I do is I count them out loud so that players are in no doubt when they have to kick.
Yep.
So now it's down to three, I believe, in international rules. Stevie, you would have had a low. It was always three, was it? I can't remember.
No, it was.
It was more.
It was more
five.
At one stage. Down. It's reduced now to three,
which is
brilliant.
Which is brilliant. But how hard, as a player, and you've played a lot of international rules, did you find that to adapt to?
Not hard at all. You know, it actually offers an opportunity for players to provide communication amongst each other. The players are counting out the hand pass. The referees, to be fair, are excellent at that end of the game and officiating that end of the game. They are counting it out loud, so they are making you aware of the total number of hand passes you've made. And yeah, it offers an opportunity for any player on the field to kick pass. You know, and I think it's a brilliant way of maybe trying to counteract the total number of hand passes that's taking place in our own game. The only two ways, actually, that I think it can be stopped. The second way is a wee bit more difficult to officiate, obviously, is a stop clock or a time clock like they have in basketball. But definitely the total number of hand passes can be, you know, I suppose, trialled. So can for a period for one of the pre-season competitions, at least, to see how it develops and how it moves the game on and how it speeds the game up. But in international rules, it is a very effective rule and it works really, really well. You know, you can be guaranteed that most plays are going forward, most attacks are going forward within a certain amount of time.
Yeah, so I got on to Jarlett Burns then yesterday. When Pat McEnany told me this, I got on to Jarlett Burns. I text Jarlett Burns and says, Jarlett, bring in this hand pass rule.
Oh, you told him.
I bring it in. Pat McEnany says there's no problem with it, so I don't see why you're wasting your time. And Jarlett replied back, I am no longer the chair of that committee.
But in Jarlett's defence, Lance. He's a brilliant fan of the show. He loves listening to you, Wally. So he does. He keeps telling me he listens in every week. So, you know, if Jarlath has any words of persuasion at all, or anyway, I'm sure he will put, you know, make a note of it and mention it to the powers that be.
He will. Well, I'll tell you the powers that be. So he says, in fact, I am no longer anything in the GAA at all. So John Horan's come in. Jarlath has been part of committees. And Jesus, I have a great relationship with Jarlath. Jarlath's open-minded. He brought in the mark. He brought in this new kick-out rule. He's aware that there's a few tweaks needed. He's not burying his head in the sand. He's progressive. And now he's gone. John Horan obviously didn't fancy him. I think the president picks all these committee members or whatever. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. But anyways, there's a new fella, he's from Derry, David Hassan. He's the new chair, Conan. Do you know this man?
He used to lecture me in Jordanstown, actually.
Did he?
University of Ulster.
Ah, well, we've an in then, because Jarlath's taken a call from this show loads of times, and it's great to get someone from the GAA who's inside to actually come on and explain a couple of things. Like, he came on the hurling show after a big controversy about the helmet rules back in an Ireland semi-final on the Monday. Like, it was fantastic. But anyways, I'm starting a campaign here today to save the kick pass.
I really like what you're doing, and I love your moral crusade, you know, and I like the action that you're taking here. But the three hand passes, like, you know, some moves that are great. Like, the hand pass is a problem when people are just coming out, and like Kerry used it really well. I think it might have been 4 or 5 hand passes sometimes, and it looked amazing. But the thing in training, when you add those conditions when it's no touch and it has to be hand passes, sometimes it does look class because the ball's moving.
And I wouldn't say 3, I would say 5. Five is better, because that beautiful Cara Finn goal in the All Ireland
club, absolutely.
But that was about 5.
It encourages great angled runs. No doubt about it. But the kick pass doesn't have to be a 40, 50 yard kick pass, remember. It just has to leave your boot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it can be a short pass.
Ulster man's finding a way around it.
No, but I do understand. It doesn't have to be 3 hand passes. 3 in Gaelic football would probably be too few. But you know, the hand pass and some of the intricate movement.
That's beautiful. That's a skill.
It's brilliant to watch. But when you're going to 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, it annoys almost any GAA fan, you know, because you do want to see an element of kick passing in the game as well.
It's interesting to hear you say that, Stevie, because like when I see on Twitter, most defenders of the likes of the Fermanagh-Monaghan match are people from Ulster, because often Ulster take this criticism of an Ulster game almost as a personal attack on Ulster, rather than this is people looking at the game in its totality and how it can be improved as a spectacle. And passing sideways outside a screen isn't good for, I don't care, it's not good for anyone to watch. I challenge anyone that loves Gaelic football to say that that's good for the game. So maybe the hand pass, save the kick pass. Because another point I was going to make was, like you mentioned there, Conan, the hand passing games in training. I've played hand passing games in training on every team at every level that I've ever played on. And when the manager calls out, right lads, hand passing game, there's a groan. Players are livid. Oh, for fuck's sake, this, you don't enjoy it, it's crap. And often, I don't know why it was, maybe it was a leash thing, but it happened with Parnell as well. We always seem to play the backs against the forwards. The backs always won because they worked harder than the forwards. So like these games,
and that's what hand passing comes down to. Ultimately it comes down to players being prepared to move hard off the ball as much as anything
and
else.
McGuinness won an All-Ireland based on the principle of a hand passing game where one team works harder than the other, and he outworked Cork, Kerry, Mayo and won an All-Ireland.
But he shocked Mayo, if you remember, Carl Lacey putting that long direct ball in to Michael Murphy and back at net.
They were the little tweaks that McGuinness was able to do because he was obviously an outstanding manager. Just a quick one before we move on here, lads. There's a CPA update, and anyone that is a member of the CPA would have got this email. So this is for the benefit of anybody who's not a member of the CPA, and you should be. So they met the GAA president in March and asked them to set up a national fixtures forum in 2018 by inviting all the relevant stakeholders to decide together the best way forward. This forum would be a catalyst for significant and sustainable change. We believe that slow and incremental change to the fixtures crisis will not deliver proper fixtures plans players deserve. So two of them went in to meet the president and meet Tom Ryan as well, and the meeting went well, they said, and they've been offered an opportunity to present their ideas to the CCCC next month. And the CCCC is currently starting to work on a master's fixtures plan for 2019. So I think that's a brilliant positive step forward that they've been invited in to give their ideas to the fixtures plan. I think John Horan, Tom Ryan deserve an awful lot of credit for not being like Angus, I've forgotten him already, O'Farrell.
At least they've been afforded the opportunity to go and present. you know, their concerns to the GAA, and that's a good step forward.
And another thing is important to say is the GAA can also give the CPA some ideas on how that might not or not work, and stuff that maybe I haven't thought of roadblocks that they know from being inside that we might not know on the outside, because I think the CPA have very logical ideas, and you know it would be great if they can get in together, which they are going to do. And yeah, so that's a really positive update. Right, we'll be back and we'll be talking about the big game this weekend. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I
don't want no more in it, man. The big one of the weekend I was talking about, lads, is Laois and Carlow at the weekend. And the reason I think it's the big one of the weekend, because it's a novelty game. It's a 50-50 game in my eyes. Laois are 4-7 favourites with Paddy Power, which, you know, I'm not sure they're that far ahead. But this is why it is such a big novelty game. And a lot of people around the country don't even know that. Turlough O'Brien was talking during the week and he says there's a lot of players from South Laois clubs where Carlow would be their local town. It's a healthy rivalry. Of course we'd love to beat Laois, but they've had the upper hand for as long as I can remember. Clubs in South Laois, when we'd win with Laois, even loads of big games, most lads would go out in Port Laois after the game, we'd stay together. But the lads from Ireland, Killeen, Kilcruz, like Beano, Chris Conway, all these fellas, then the great Cullen lads who are in Carlow, they'd all go out in Carlow. Like, that's their hometown. Like, you don't really hear that in any other situation that I know of. Your hometown is in another county. So this is why this is, for the south part of Laois, this is a huge deal that Carlow are now rivals, because I was talking with Padraig Clancy yesterday, and like I've said this on the podcast, Carlow were never rivals of ours, and I don't mean that disrespectfully to Carlow, but we were a Division 1 team and they were Division 4 and we beat them easily. And me and Clancy wouldn't be from the South League. You know, we would have no connection.
Well, that
to
actually
that rivalry
happens in Armagh, believe it or not. Guys from South Armagh would end up going out in Uri.
Would they? Yeah. You know, so that's,
guys from Armagh City, believe it or not, would even end up going out in Monaghan Town.
But now there's like in Port Laois, we used to go out in Tullamore or Carlow, but that didn't mean it wasn't our hometown. You know what I mean?
Uri would be South Armagh's hometown.
Would
as
it
much
be?
As
yeah.
Possible, yeah.
Right. Okay. That's interesting.
Cookstown,
and that's why
South Derry as well. Yeah. Cookstown.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's what makes these rivalry so fierce. But like, you know, I know Armagh Down is a fierce rivalry, you know, Tyrone Derry is. People might not realise there's the potential of a brilliant rivalry here between Laois and Carlow now that the two teams are on a similar level and to have all those things. But like, it's a really interesting game based on the league final. And like, I mean, I was seeing Stephen Poacher was quoted, and he was talking about Carlow retained 100% of their kickouts in the league final. Which is an incredible stat if he's telling the truth. I know they dominated Laois the kickouts, because Laois couldn't get out of their own half in the second half. The only thing is they had Brendan Murphy then, so Laois were trying to keep it away from Brendan Murphy. They don't have him now, so I think Laois's range of where they can put their kickouts, do you know what I mean, has improved an awful lot with him without him there.
Absolutely, he's a big presence around the middle of the field, and you know, he is a dominating player as well, so he's going to be a huge loss the further on Carlow go into this campaign. To be honest, so far they haven't really lost him, they haven't really missed him, because as a team they've been working hard and performing well. And their last day out, you know, against Kildare, they dominated Kildare as well, so they have a strategy in place and it works for them, and you have to give them huge credit for that.
Yeah, the thing about the kickouts is, and this is why for Carlow, while I think they're very one dimensional in their game plan, they're not one dimensional from kickouts. So against Laois in the league final, they aggressively pushed up all over the field, and Laois were in disarray in the second half. They just could not get primary possession. Against Kildare, they conceded the kickout, right? So they obviously thought Kildare were a little bit dangerous and pushing up would be too dangerous.
Probably,
and they needed to be back
open,
leaving themselves open. So it'll be interesting to see what Carlow do this time. Like, I mean, aggressive push-up worked so well in the league final. The dropping off worked the last time. If they aggressively push up and don't have Brendan Murphy and Laois start going long to midfield and win them, Laois can turn and have one-on-ones. Do you know what I mean? So there's a really interesting dynamic there.
Because then Laois can go long to the two Kingstons then as well, who can score three or four goals if you give them the space.
That's the thing.
I'd say they'll probably... Well, I'd say they might concede a bit more of it because of that, because of what's at stake. You're all suddenly in a Leinster semi-final. I think certainly for the first half, it'll be let them have the kick out, we'll set up defensively.
If they did that and lost, after the joy they got out of it in the league final, they'd be hung, drawn and quartered. They really would. They got so much joy out of this, and like they zonally, they almost did that Kerry one where they're really on top of leash.
Yeah,
you know?
But there is going to be more caution going into this game. There's for Carlo, potentially there's a lot at stake, because there is an opportunity to get to a first Leinster final in how many years, I don't know how many, but it's an opportunity for this team to create history. So, you know, they're not going to leave themselves wide open going in against a Leash team that, you know, have already proved this year that they can't beat them. So I just think there'll be a wee bit of caution provided, particularly with the kickouts.
The joy they got out of Kildare though as well, never mind the league final, they'll probably be thinking of that more recently, like this worked against Kildare, so let's just do the same thing, set up, and we'll try and get Sean Murphy to win 10 frees and yeah. Broderick will put it over.
He's like a bloody slingshot, Sean Murphy is. Like, he takes the ball at such pace that he runs into someone and there's no shot. When someone runs into you, your natural thing is kind of put your arms around him but in fairness, as John Sugru was quoted during the week, and he says Kildare might have played into their hands a little bit. That's Kildare's problem. Carlo are playing a system and they're very efficient at it, and it'll break you down if you play into them. So, like, I mean, Sugru is saying fairly clearly that Kildare just weren't at the rate. You know, Kildare played it. Number one, Kildare gave away very sloppy, easy fouls.
Yeah.
Broderick kicked them over all day. So, like, I mean, Stevie, you'll know as well from playing, and if you're playing against a team that have a really good free taker, is like, don't give away free, let them kick it from play. Because I'm looking at that Carlo forward line, I see Broderick, I see Gannon is a decent, he's a tasty left foot on him, but I don't see other players that are going to kick difficult points from play under pressure. So why foul?
Brendan Murphy would have been a player who kick from distance for
he
him
could have.
And he is missing now.
He's missing, but this is the thing, why give away a free
when
Broderick will score? Instead of just keeping pressure on and he might not score. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. And even at that, Broderick's only scored 15 points from play in 2018. You know, so we've got 65 points. He's got 3 goals as well, in fairness. Yeah. But 50 of them have been from frees. So he is also, like, obviously he's getting a lot of frees as well, but he's dependent on frees to run up his tally too.
Yeah.
So it is just the most common sense tactic of all, don't give them the free kick.
Do not give them the free kicks. Now, but Murphy,
it all depends on how it's refereed as well. Some referees will allow contact, some referees won't. Some referees will allow 2 or 3 men crowding around a player and to try to dispossess him, some referees won't. So it all depends on the interpretation from the referee. But definitely, if Leash concede fouls inside or in around the 45 metre line, you can be almost guaranteed that it's going to be a score for Carlo.
Yeah, no, there is. And I see, like, I mean, the league final was, because you were wondering what Carlo were going to bring, and while the dominated Leash were a much bigger team and they dominated the kickouts, like, I mean, this game plan, right, you need special forwards when you're playing this game plan, right? You know, all the good teams that have it have special forwards. Like, well, Tyrone kind of based off a brilliant breaking game, which is gone now, and they seem to have lost their kind of mojo. But look at the good teams. Like, they have one special forward in Broderick. It's not enough, as far as I'm concerned, because if Leash have any brains, one man will be right in front, one man will be behind, and that's it, right? So they'll use one of their spare men and just put him back in front. The rest of them, I don't see enough danger with Carlo. So sometimes, like, Kildare played into their hands, they ran up a big score. Loud played into their hands, they ran up a big score. Leash didn't play into their hands in the league final and the very last game of the league in Dr. Cullen Park, and Carlo scored 8 points in Dr. Cullen at home, and they scored 11 in the league final. So I don't see where. I think Carlo need maybe another 2 or 3. Like, look at Fermanagh, they have the Quigleys, Tomás Corrigan to come on. They've Conal Jones, who's a big man and can do a job. A lot of the, and you look at Monaghan, who obviously have McManus, McCarron, they have Kieran Hughes. You need lads that can get you points that are not necessarily on sometimes, because there's so many lads back. I think it's a self kind of defeating system in a way.
Well, if Carlo were lining up this weekend with Walsh or with Kingston in the forward line, you could say, okay, this is going to be extremely hard to play against. But as you say, you know, 1 or 2 scoring threat up front just isn't enough.
That's the thing. And when
you know, you are going further into the campaign, and that's where you need more and more players stepping up to the mark and stepping up and offering a realistic opportunity of, you know, scoring. When you're named, for me, 10 to 15, your first and foremost job is to get scores for your team. There's not enough Carlo players doing that, and that could be their downfall. But overall, they have been impressive in this campaign.
They have.
You can't deny them.
No, absolutely not. You can't. So this is it. If both teams mirror each other, both teams work as hard as each other, both teams are as tactically clued in as each other, you would imagine that the likes of Ross Munley, Donny Kingston, Paul Kingston, and then you've Gary Walsh to come on, you've Niall Donoghue to come on, you know, you've Evan O'Carroll could potentially start. Unfortunately, his father passed away during the week, so I don't think they're sure in leash what's whether Evan is going to tug out or not. But if he does, that's a higher quality of forwards for me that can get scores in these tight. It's going to be a low scoring tight game, you'd imagine. You'd imagine when both teams are mirroring each other that the best team should still win that as well.
Yeah, you'd imagine Kildare also should have won.
But they didn't mirror them though. They were tactically stupid.
Yeah, but I'd say, like, you know, if Kildare played them eight or nine times out of 10, or they would win 8 or 9 times out of 10 if they played them 10 times, no matter what they were doing. But what Carter were doing and why Turlock and Stephen and all these boys deserve a bit of credit. They're completely maximising everything they have. Like, you imagine Tyrone, I think, funnily enough, the problem with them this year is that they've abandoned what they were doing and what sort of conceded their weaknesses because they were just focusing on their strengths. Carlo don't have, it's like Sam Mayo need to find Peter Canavan. They don't have it. Like, Carlo don't have that that player either that's going to just put it into Murphy.
There's another thing though, I will say, and I take your point. Mm. And they've been saying you have to devise a system that suits your players. But sure, that poacher lad plays that system with every system.
So every
team he finds now must have players to suit the system. I don't believe that. I think if he goes to down to Kerry, he'll play the same bloody system.
We all know that there is certain coaches and managers out there that enjoy playing to a system. Rory Gallagher's another one.
Yeah.
You know, most teams that Rory Gallagher is involved with play the system that Fermanagh are currently playing. And that's a system that they totally believe in, and that's fine. But, you know, what I would love to see from those type of coaches is, you know, a plan B as well. An attacking plan as much as anything. And maybe Carlo would say that the likes of Sean Murphy coming from deep and breaking game lines is that plan B.
That's a very effective plan. That's their plan A.
But it is a very effective plan B as well. He's their go-to man around that middle of the pitch. And definitely against Kildare, you know, he was a force to be reckoned with. So he was on, you know, created havoc.
He's been a force to be reckoned with since that Dublin game last year. When it's the first time I saw him play. I don't know, that was his debut, but maybe he's not young, but I hadn't seen him playing before. He's so fast and big and strong that he's really hard to stop. Kieran Lillis will pick him up. Now, Lillis, a Port Leash player, he's been having a fantastic year. Did quite well on him in the league final, and Lillis is a natural defender, so he will have that defensive instinct that won't worry in the slightest about having to mark him because he's used to marking lads anyways as a defender. So he's a good matchup. Gareth Dillon has been sensational so far. Stephen Attroyd marked Broderick in the league final. I think Gareth Dillon will be moved over to him this time. He's been absolutely brilliant. Begley's been in good form, a centre halfback. It's going to be a great game. I think, okay, it's not going to be a great game. It's not going to be an outstanding quality game. Although the league final, Leash got 15 points and kicked some beautiful scores.
What a Carlo score against Kildare. 2-13, was it?
2-14.
2-14, you know, so...
Well, I'll tell you a stat on that now, right? So they got 1-9 from play, right? 1-9 from play. So out of 2-14, then you're left with 1-5 left. Their goal was the last kick of the game when Kildare were ragged all over the place. Their goal from play, right? So they got 5 points from play.
Yeah.
They kicked no wides. So in 70 minutes they had 5 shots at the goal, which is unprecedented. It's unprecedented.
Yeah, they were very effective when afforded those opportunities. And you know,
but if you're having 5 shots at the goal,
if you have 15 attempts a goal and you take 13 or 14 of them, compared to the team who have 30 and only take 12 of them, you know, I know what stat I would prefer to be on.
Well, I know too, but they're only hitting 5, not 15. They're 100% with 10, I'd say that's good. But 5, and what if they drop off their 100%? Then they're down to 3 shots at the goal. Shots at the goal.
Yeah.
they're at 5 shots at the goal, but they're at 3 points. Yeah. But the point I'm trying to make is that to only have 5 shots at a goal in an entire game, like, it's, I asked the stats fella, it's usually the average is 19 from play, shots at the goal. This is 5.
But they still scored 2-14. And that's the key stat. So it is, you know, they created opportunities in terms of, you know, getting into the forward line and winning frees for their team. And that still should be, you know, classed as a stat and a shot on goal.
Do you think for the wider audience outside of our, like, us nerds, that people are more interested in Dublin long term? I was just thinking, you know, what you were talking earlier about Leash Carew. Is it like, would you rather watch Burnley against Watford? Or would you rather watch United against Wigan?
Trust me on this.
For the masses, they'll tune in to watch United.
Trust me on this. They won't. I'm a big Kerry, you know, I'm a fan of Kerry. I love their attitude towards football. I love their style of football. I love a lot of their players. I just love the whole culture of football in Kerry. And I drove down to Kerry last week thinking there'd be a bit of a competitive game with Clare. We were tipping on the podcast here that Clare might beat the 8 handicap. They're third in Division 2. And in future, I'm wiping league form off any analysis when it comes to championship. It's a waste of time. You can't reference it because it means nothing. And I went down there and at halftime, I felt like going home. And now this is someone who likes watching Kerry play. There is nobody wants to see. It's minus 18 is the handicap. Yep. Nobody wants to see you, Conan. I get your point. We all love watching Dublin. I love watching Dublin. Mm. But geez, not when they're just destroying.
But sure, it's on the game and have the full match anyway. So that'll make a difference.
It's going to be on television. We want to talk quickly about Donegal and Down, Stevie. Like, I mean, Down surprised everyone against Monaghan last year. Like, can they do it again? Like, the two Johnsons not there. Like, I mean, a lot of the same lads are there. Like, they're a solid championship team and they can shock teams. Like,
absolutely.
I mean,
and you know, they'll certainly get themselves up for it. They will take huge belief from what Fermanagh done last weekend. But it's also a warning sign for the likes of Donegal going into this game for what Monaghan done last weekend. You know, they fell into the trap of playing Fermanagh and playing into their, web as much as anything. But Down, listen, we all know if any team in Ulster can create upsets and any team can score goals, you know, for fun, you know, when on form, it is Down, and they will have an arrogance and they'll have a cockiness going into this game. I have absolutely no doubt about it. But they're coming up against who I tipped before the championship, Donegal, a team that I believe have the best out and out squad, man for man across the board. They have the best bench, they've got the best starting 15, they've got a forward line that are clinical, and they've got a manager who's allowing those players to play a bit more football now as well. And I just think that last weekend will be a huge warning sign for Donegal, and they'll go in with the right attitude. I do think it'll be a good enough game. It'll be a good open game of football.
It'll be better than last week anyway.
It won't be as negative as last weekend. It'll be a good, decent game of football, but, you know, ultimately, Donegal, the class of Donegal, will probably see them through.
It's hard to disagree with that. Like, I mean, you'd nearly pay the admission fee to see Conair Harrison take on Neil McGee there in that full forward line. My God.
Yeah, well, Neil McGee may not start.
No, I think he's going to be back. He's back fit anyways. Yeah. Whether he starts or not is another story. I was reading that he is back fit.
Donal Hur is also another player. You know, I coach him at club level.
He wasn't there last year, was he?
He came back from a bad ankle injury last year, so he struggled to get into the starting 15, but he has been Down's main forward this year. He's a player capable of racking up 7-8 points in any particular game. He's a live wire. His movement is excellent, so it is. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see who's going to pick him up. You would expect, in the corner, Paddy McGrath to maybe pick him up, because Paddy McGrath is the experienced player in there. But Donal O'Hare is a threat for Down as well. And the one thing about Down is, you know, if Conor Harrison can, you know, replicate the form that he showed last year, then their inside forward line, you know, have potential to cause havoc if provided with the ball. And you look at Down's defence, particularly the half back line, they have dangerous players breaking forward as well. So they will, you know, create headaches for Donegal. But
cornerback Doherty scored 3 points from play against Antrim. I'm not sure. Do you know Doherty, cornerback?
No, I don't know much about him, to be honest. And I do know quite a bit about most of the Down players. Did he come up and kick freeze though?
Could have come up and kick freeze. Yeah. Not too sure. Well, we know O'Hagan comes up and kicks freeze, doesn't he? Like, I mean, he didn't score
from time to time. No, O'Hanlon.
O'Hanlon does, yeah.
But O'Hanlon, he's out injured, so he is, and he's a huge loss.
Yeah, O'Hanlon. Yeah, he's out. He's the free taker. So, it is interesting. Another huge matchup here is Caelan Mooney versus Ryan McHugh.
Yeah,
that's another reason to go to that game. Like, you're going to it, Conan.
Yeah. Of course, it's also championship.
I think this will be, there's too much attacking intent in both of those teams to see two stalemates at either end. Now there will be times when that will happen.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will be happening as frequently as maybe last week's game.
What would be really good with Mooney and McHugh is two really attacking players looking to go at it. Whereas Derry put a young fella on him, like, just to follow McHugh. It was a championship debut and he just followed him everywhere, and he wasn't interested in going forward or anything. He's a good player, but
because McHugh's wing forward now with Donegal, isn't he? He's been left half back for so long, but he seems to be playing wing forward now. It's all kind of you know, jumbled in together a lot of the time.
The one switch that I would possibly make in the Down team, and it's taken away from their attacking impetus from the half back line, is Darren O'Hagan. I think Darren O'Hagan is one of the best cornerbacks in Ulster, one of the best defenders in Ulster, and I would put him in, Mark and Paddy McBrady, so would for this particular game. Paddy right. McBrady, we know of the threat if he gets any type of quality at all, and he will kick, you know, off the shoulder, and most of the time it goes over the bar. But Darren O'Hagan is the type of player who's sticky, and I don't see, you know, that type of close defender in their full back line at the minute, and that could be their Achilles heel. So having
Doherty could be a tight marker. Yeah,
but having to take Darren O'Hagan from a good attacking half back line out of that position and moving him into the full back line, you know, could be the only way for them, but it will take away from their attacking threat.
I always feel with Down, it's take your goals and your points will come. That seems to be their attitude. Like, it's just every time they attack, they seem to want to get a goal, and that's what makes them a little bit unpredictable, and that's what makes it so exciting going to this game now, even though it's Donegal and even though they're definitely favourites. There is, you mentioned arrogance, like, there is that cockiness about Down people, and in the way they play especially, like, they're Joe Brawley's wet dream. And, like, you know, you never on any day do you think they could beat anybody.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't it be an unbelievable turn up for the books if Down play Fermanagh in the Ulster final?
Yeah.
Like, Down were in the final last year, people are forgetting as well. Like, I mean, Down
beat Monaghan on the way.
Down often fool you, and this is why I don't want to talk about league form anymore. Because especially for a county like Down, it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant to how they're going as a county. You know what I mean? You know that well, Stevie.
Absolutely,
like, they bringing league analysis into this. You know, like, I mean, you think in your head Donegal are that bit better than Down, but Down don't think that.
No, sometimes you go into a game, you know, as the underdog, and you're hoping to put in a performance, you're hoping to get a result. I can guarantee you now, Down are going into this Ulster semi-final expecting to get a result, so they are. And that is the arrogance of them, and they've every reason to be arrogant, because they have proven time and again that they are a top-class championship team, and they really get themselves up for championship year in, year out. And that, you know, is a huge thing to look back on as well. You know, when it's a great thing to have that type of pedigree going into a championship Ulster semi-final. Donegal will be aware of that there, and they will be aware of the arrogance and the cockiness that Down will bring to this game. So that's why I expect it to be an open enough game of football, with both attacks, you know, going hell for leather at it.
Yeah, hopefully it will, there's no doubt. I think maybe the Ulster Championship needs it after the one last week, and like we said, that this one has the potential
after
to be
the
really
biggest
good
upset of the year.
Yeah, but the one thing about last week, it was a dull game, but it was you're on edge watching it.
No,
you know what?
But that's because listen, if you saw two flies crawling up the wall and you got into your head, I wonder who'll get up there first, I would be watching that grip to it. Do you get me? Like, a competitor will want to see competition. Yeah. That doesn't mean, like, what did the Real Madrid president say about Liverpool and Liverpool Chelsea? It was Champions League semi-final. If you put two bits of shit out in the field, or two shit on a stick, people will I don't know what. Do you not remember that quote?
No,
it was something about the horrible game.
Everton he was talking
but
about.
But honestly, lads, don't give me this. Do you not want to see competition? If that's the case, you can just put any competition once it's close and we're okay. That doesn't cut it for me.
You said you switched off at half time in Killarney. You wouldn't have done that.
Like I said on Monday, Conan, I don't want that, and I don't want that. Can we not meet somewhere in the middle?
And I think we might have that with Donegal and Down.
Yes, brilliant way of wrapping up this segment, Stevie. Right, up next we'll do Paddy Power's predictions.
Conan Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
Okay, Paddy Power predictions, lads, and we'll start with Laois Carlow, and we can't be long with all of these because we have Cheddar waiting outside the door here for the Hurling podcast.
You tell me Hurling taking precedence over the podcast.
The Hurling
well.
Podcast is a superpower now, Conan.
They've got the TV. They can you've got all the TV games. We have a podcast here, a dedicated football show. Cheddar can wait. He's actually outside.
You might have heard that, Conan. He's a very big man. Right, we'll start with Donegal Down. Donegal are 1-4 in this one, according to Paddy Power, and Down are 7-2. I think that Donegal are a terribly measly price here. What do you think here? Well, I think we're all going for Donegal realistically. Well, I don't think they're 4-1 or 4-1 on favourites.
Yeah, I'm going for Donegal, but I'd only stick them in an accumulator. I wouldn't go on a spread with him. I wouldn't back on him to get much money for you. So just
right. What is the spread there, Stevie? Have you clicked into
it? -4 or even
-4, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I'd stay away from that.
No, yeah. I would stay away from that as well. I think Donegal will win, but only just.
Okay, Laois Carlow, lads. Laois are 4-7 favourites, and Carlow are 7-4. Now you were both left with egg on your faces after the Westmeath game.
Yeah,
you both went for Westmeath. And I don't have you, Stevie, in on a Monday, and I've forgotten about it by the time the following Thursday comes along. So in your face, buddy, I backed Laois, they won it, you didn't. Are you going to do the same this time?
I am going to go with Laois on this occasion, and simply going back to the points we made earlier on, I think they've got more out and out scoring threat up front, and if it comes to a dogfight between two teams who plan to play a defensive brand of football, then Laois have the armour up front.
Yeah, okay, Conan.
I really want to go with Carlow just for a crack, and they've seen them twice now, but so have Laois seen Carlow, so yeah, go with Laois, they do have the firepower.
Alright, okay, so Dublin and Longford, so this is a very, very one-sided game. Dublin are 1-200, lads. This is a provincial semi-final, lads. This will tell you how bad this has gotten, the Leinster Championship with Dublin in it. Dublin are -18, that's the talking point here, whether Dublin can beat the spread. Whatever magic Paddy Power is able to weave over this, he's never far off this handicap. So, like, I mean, I think Dublin will beat that -18 in Croke Park.
I wouldn't even look at that betting whatsoever, so I wouldn't even be interested in it.
It was minus 22, 23 against Wicklow, and they got it.
It was -22 and it was 23 points to a one off. Yeah.
So I'm not going to doubt. I think it'll be actually more than -18.
Right.
Croke Park, it's like Longford, tough team.
I would actually be looking more towards the qualifiers and saying that London could cause the upset against Louth.
Yeah, we'll get to that now, Stevie. So let's hold your horses there. Why are you jumping there?
I don't want to talk about Dublin because they're going to win, and they're going to win quite comfortably. I don't think we should be talking about Dublin beating.
You're hired and paid very well to talk about what I want you to talk about.
They paid very well, but I don't know about that.
All right, so we'll start with the qualifiers then. Stevie doesn't want to talk about Dublin. But let's not have him on the All-Ireland Final Review Show then.
I'm talking about when it's a total mismatch.
No, I get your point. I'm only joking. Right, so we'll start with the qualifiers then, and we'll run through them. So Derry Kildare, this is a really close one, and this is in Own Beg. And is Own Beg a fortress, Conan? Kildare, Derry are slight outsiders, 5-4, Kildare 4-5. I see this is very 50-50. I'd give Kildare an outside chance, or I'd give Derry an outside chance of winning this. I might go for Derry in this altogether.
What's the spread? Or plus?
I wouldn't be anything with it
plus
that close.
Maybe, Own Beg's right in the middle of the county. That's where most of the GA population is, and that's why they always want it there as opposed to Celtic Park, which is in the city with a soccer population, a couple of clubs. But I'm going to go for Kildare, and they've also knocked Derry out in the last few years in the qualifiers as well.
Right.
It's a better team.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Derry. Kildare haven't won a game in over a year, and yes, they may have knocked Derry out in the last couple of years, but sometimes that run's going to come to an end, and I think this weekend it's going
to
happen.
It's always the case when it's a team you follow. Trust Derry to be the first team to break Kildare's year, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Everton. Some teams lost 6 in a row and suddenly they beat Everton. Anyways, right, Limerick Mayo, lads. Limerick are 10-1, Mayo are 1-50. It's a great draw, let's be honest. No disrespect to Limerick, for Mayo to get back on the road. Mayo traditionally have huge cobwebs coming into these kind of games, so I'm not sure what the handicap is there, Stevie, but I would be maybe fancying, if it's a really big one, I'd nearly fancy Limerick
-13.
I'd go Limerick plus that then, just the cobwebs and like the last couple of years, the evidence of Mayo trying to regroup. I can't see them hammering Limerick out the gate away.
Mayo have a big 10 minutes last 10 minutes and win by 7 or something, they'll be in the mires before
I would actually think that Mayo will beat them by 13 plus.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I would go with Limerick plus 13.
All right, London Loud, lads. This is 11-8. London outsiders, Loud are 8-11. Loud are in disarray. They're in an awful state. They have to travel over to London. Again, I'm giving London a chance in this. It's like these, like Loud and Kildare have proven to me that I ain't trusting those two playing anybody after their last two results against Carlow. Maybe London have seen the blueprint from Carlow against Loud and maybe play a little bit like that. I give London. If morale is bad in the camp and you have to go away to London, I think that might be a little bit of a step too far, you know? Like, I mean, that travelling, I think there has to be maybe a much better kind of atmosphere in the camp to be doing the right thing when you go over there. So I give London a chance in this.
So am I. I'm definitely giving London a chance. I think the year that Louth have had, relegated, haven't had a win in quite some time as well. So I'm going to go for London.
Okay, Conan.
Yeah, me too. Morales is too bad. It's very hard to reverse.
All right, the big one at this weekend then in the qualifiers is Meath and Tyrone. This is in Navan. Meath obviously regrouped well in the qualifiers last year, only lost to Donegal by a point. Lost badly to Longford last time. Tyrone are trying to regroup themselves, and you know they have injuries. Mark Bradley's out. Lee Brennan, we don't know if he's back from that hamstring injury that he's went off, but the Monaghan game was a reoccurrence of another hamstring injury, and now I don't know whether if Mark Bradley's out, if Lee Brennan's out, if Ronan O'Neill could be banished forever after having
Mickey
words with Mickey Hart.
Will be licking his lips if that's the case.
He actually won't ever have to pick a full forward line at all. But that's all your inside now. McAlisky's obviously the main man in there on current form. Bradley would be the main man if he was right. But Bradley's definitely out. Do you give me the chance in this?
Why not? At home, 10-3. Absolutely. I would give them a chance. Will they win? I think Tyrone will just scrape it. I think they'll just have enough to see them through, but only just.
Yeah, I'd be the same as that. I think that Tyrone will just scrape a win out the gate. I think Meath, and there's a bit of history between these two, obviously, since the 96 semi-final where Meath walked all over them, literally. Martin O'Connell walked on Doher's head, yeah. But now, in fairness to Martin O'Connell that time, he wasn't looking down. He was looking straight at the ball. I've seen that replay an awful lot of times.
Well, a lot of those Tyrone boys are asking for it as well. That's completely out of order. Let's cut that. I'm going to go with Tyrone. I think to get back to basics, get men behind the ball, suck them in and overrun them. And it's a very simple game. I think it has been complicated in the last few months because Sean Kavanagh's influence. I don't know. People like suggesting that they should do something different, and they looked like they didn't really know what they were doing against Monaghan, and that's the first time I could say that about Tyrone in the last 3 years. So I think that might actually be a bit of a victory for Mickey Hart in a way. Okay. Get back to what they were doing best.
Yeah, so we'll all go for Tyrone here, but only just to scrape over Meath. Offaly Antrim wouldn't be interesting, only it is interesting now because since the last time Offaly played, they've given their manager the boot, who we had on the show here, and they've gotten in a management team of Paul Rouse, a historian who has football pedigree, won county titles with Tullamore. He also have Seamus Darby. No need to talk about who Seamus Darby is. And they've Alan McNamee, interestingly enough. And you wonder, was Alan McNamee brought in to maybe talk his brother around coming back? And I haven't heard any talk about it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Niall McNamee lining out the next day. Like, I mean, if your brother is part of the team and your county's back is against the wall, you know, if there's any reason that you would play one or two more games, well, that would be, they would be
possibly,
big reasons.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any talk about whether Niall McNamee, maybe I'm talking nonsense here, but imagine if they overturned the board's decision and got Keane Johnson playing and then got Niall McNamee on the full forward line and got a management team and got the morale, you know, back up. Johnny Maloney, wasn't it Johnny Maloney that dropped off the panel? He's back in again. So suddenly Offaly could turn things around, and it's a really good draw for them against a team that they're well capable of beating at home. I'll go for Offaly in this one.
Yeah, and we'll see if the new management bounce is a thing in the GAA, like bringing someone in mid-season. Suddenly it sounds like a completely different camp. They'll have new training sessions, fresh voices.
Yeah,
I think it'll be like the morale and mentality of the whole camp will be different, and it's a long trip for Antrim. They go down there.
Yeah, Stevie, same. Awfully rate
to
11.
I'm going to go with Antrim. I'm going to stick with Antrim.
Ulster bias.
No, not Ulster bias. Just think that, you know, they've had probably more content in their team throughout the course of the year, and I think they'll be the team to beat.
All right, well, this is a big one for you, Stevie. Westmeath against Armagh. Westmeath 9-4, Armagh 4-9. Fancy Armagh strongly for me in this one. Westmeath were a disaster against Laois. They've got an awful lot of injuries, although Heslin, you'd imagine, will be back.
Yeah.
You wonder why Heslin didn't play the last day when he could come on. Like, I mean, if John Heslin can come on, I'm starting him. The whole psychology around him not starting when other lads were out. Kieran Martin playing wing forward is an absolute disaster. He doesn't have the engine to play that working role. He's a full forward man now. And it's madness playing him anywhere else that he can take on his man. But anyways, there, Westmead against Laois were very, very poor. Armagh against Fermanagh were very, very poor. Yeah. So these are two teams that I'd say will start this game very tentatively.
Yeah, my concern for Armagh is that they've travelled to Westmeath over the last couple of years, like Kildare have done with Derry, and they beat them. And you know, sometimes that their run is going to ultimately come to an end. And Westmeath traditionally create a lot of problems for Armagh, so particularly down there. So I'd be a wee bit worried about it. So I know when I tip Armagh, generally things go against me. So I might just say Westmeath have a chance in this game. So
right.
And hopefully Armagh will come in.
Right.
The right
have
end
you
it.
Been hearing anything around the county?
No, absolutely. No, absolutely not. It's based totally on, you know, recent history.
Yeah.
And that's Armagh getting results
down
there.
That's kind of, my father used that logic. They'll have to lose them at some stage. But at the same time, Westmeath are going very badly.
I was down there last year and, you know, Westmeath rallied in the last maybe 10 minutes of the game and could have won the game. And Armagh broke up the field at pace and got a lucky goal and, you know, seen the game out. But I just think that it's a very difficult game for Armagh to get back on the road. So it is, I hope, fingers crossed that Armagh can get the result, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Westmeath really put them to the pin of the collar.
Okay, Conan, we have to be very quick on this. You're going for Armagh?
One word, Armagh, because I don't want to keep your hurling shoe waiting.
One word, Armagh is right. Right, Wexford, Waterford, we're going to have to go one word here. I'm going Wexford, or 2-7 at home. Although, look, you'd have to say it's Wexford at home, although Wexford are gone very bad. They were terrible against Laois in that second half. But anyways, Wicklow, we'll all go Wexford on that one. Wicklow, Cavan, Wicklow at home. Ockram's a very hard place to go. Insert cliche here.
Cavan. One word, Cavan.
One word, Cavan. Cavan are 1-14, so you'd imagine that's a done deal there. Yeah. Like, I mean, Ockram can be overplayed. And that's it. So now we can get going to the most popular GAR show, the hurling show.
That's only the Monday show. This is the most popular Thursday show.
Wait, I have to thank Paddy Power, obviously, and say that we'll be back on Monday with a review show as normal. All right, good luck.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.